Cal Bergendahl Project. At the end of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist. So please join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. You know, wherever I go, I hear conversations about angry or at least cranky people and stories of rude interactions. Well, today we're going to be talking with a national listening expert who is helping companies and families develop better interactions through better listening. Christine Miles is an author, professional keynote speaker, consultant, executive coach, thought leader, entrepreneur, and recognized world expert in the field of listening differently. Christine has helped thousands of executives and individuals and families expand their connections. She holds a BS in psychology from Millersville University, a master's in psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, and a certificate in structural family therapy from the Philadelphia Child Guidance Center. And one of her most recent books is What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? And we'll hear a few of the tips that she offers in that book as we go on today. So welcome to the program, Christine. Thanks for joining us. So tell me, Dr. Miles, when I hear about your book and I hear about the topics that you're speaking on, it sounds like you're addressing the rudeness and abrasiveness that is out there in the world today, and then obviously offering some explanation for it and some ways to combat it. Let's start with the problem. What are you seeing out there?
Well, I think there's a drought of understanding. Frankly, I think we want to be understood, and our lack of feeling understood has led to us being less understanding. So I think that's led to, you know, an epidemic, and that epidemic is leading to us not behaving at our best and really losing the human connection that really makes life and the world better. So that's part of what I'm after is giving people help for that problem. Because I think we all want the same things, most of us. We just, you know, we're just stuck.
So anecdotally, what have you been hearing from area businesses? I understand the hospital was one of the areas where that was kind of a good example where they're telling people to behave themselves, basically.
Yeah, I think, you know, the common thing we hear is what is social media doing to us? What about this next generation? Like, what are we setting? Do they know how to communicate? And in reality, I think we are worried about who we're raising, but I think we also aren't raising ourselves very well, and we're all guilty of it. It's not a blame situation, but The ease of which and the speed at which we have access to things has enabled us in such incredible ways, but it's also led to an incredible amount of disconnection. And so that disconnection is leading to, again, what I believe is a drought of understanding, because we need to be humanly connected to really to really be our best and make those two worlds, the digital world and the human world, come together for the most success. Yeah.
I was getting my hair cut this morning, and I mentioned I was going to be doing this interview today, and a lot of people joined in right away. You can tell that the topic is resonating with folks, and one of the things that the individual had mentioned is, I just feel like there's this entitlement aspect out there that people are entitled. They feel they're entitled to get exactly what they want, even if it's against the rules. Do you find that?
Yeah, and entitled is such a strong word, and I understand why people are using it. I think about the act, you know, and again, some of this is socioeconomic, so there's no question about that. And really, but when you think about the accessibility of information, most people have some sort of a device, a phone, a computer. And so we have quick access to information. We used to have to research things to find them out. Now we just, you know, I'll bet we can answer that. Let's just look it up, right? I can order Amazon and I can have something within 24 hours. And so the speed at which we're used to having what we want has accelerated at a pace that is phenomenal. And I think there's a price we're paying, because that's on a human level, that's not really how it works. So our expectations are out of kilter quite a bit. And so we are entitled. We are entitled in a lot of ways.
You have brought up social media a couple of times, and I will say my husband tends to blame all the ills of the world on social media, even though we do both understand that it's also a plus.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically in what ways has social media affected communication, do you feel, from your research?
Well, you know, I'm certainly, you know, there are people that are heavily researched and experts in this area. And so what I have studied is really on the human level and what's happening and working with our clients and people. So I just want to make that preface, because in no way am I saying I am the social media expert. I am the listening expert, and how listening can help solve some of the ills of disconnection. And so I think, you know, there's incredible things that can be learned from social media, but it's also, I heard a quote like, social media is not really social. But what about social media is actually social? We're not talking to anybody, interacting with anyone. So it's kind of an oxymoron. And I think that's the problem. And also, it makes things very anonymous. And so we know with kids that the bullying has gone up and the expectation. Life is filtered through social media, because we can put filters on our phones. We can filter what we watch. We can filter what we say, and it can be planned. So the expectation of what life's supposed to look like is also not real. I mean, I started, you know, my career at 22. I was a home-based family therapist, and what I learned is that we are all faking it. When you walk up to the house in the driveway, no matter how pretty the place looks, what goes on behind closed doors isn't obvious to everybody. So there's this falsehood, and social media just put that on steroids, because we can project out whatever we want people to know about us, and we can keep the other things locked in our you know, metaphoric houses. And so the expectation for what life is supposed to look like in this perfect world is leading others to not feel so perfect, and that's causing more depression, more anxiety, more bullying, because we're not really engaging. It's really hard to bully someone you know when you like them, when you understand who they are, when you understand their story, when you understand their struggles. It changes how we behave towards one another.
So how do you go about, in this world of kind of disconnected relationships, how do you go about really understanding other people's stories?
Well, that's really where listening comes in. I think, you know, as I said, and what I wrote about in the book and why I titled the book I did, which is What Is It Costing You Not to Listen, is we can't solve a problem we don't know we have. And so we are in a listening, drought of listening epidemic too. And I believe there's a very good reason for that. And the number one reason is we're told to listen and we're very rarely taught. So there are 0 years of education in schools on listening, and we are sending young people out into the world without any skill, and we are taking it for granted. We spend the majority of education through elementary to executive leadership programs on telling, talking, being experts, being knowledgeable, when listening to understand, not just hearing something, but listening to understand is probably the most powerful skill that one needs to know so that they can navigate the world in a way that helps them solve problems and adjust. And we're not spending time on that. So I'm not surprised at all that through the social platforms that we have, the digital influxation, and then you add the pandemic on top of it, we're in a crisis, I believe.
So I know that you have a number of clients who you're coaching through things such as this in order to be a better company, to be a better person, to better serve customers. Can you give me, without giving the names of the companies, obviously, or organizations, some examples about approaches and what you can actually do if you don't even recognize you have a problem? Quite often, it's pretty hard to fix.
Yeah, well, that's our job. Our job is to help. And I think this is the good news is this is getting easier. It is a positive side effect of the pandemic. And part of why I wrote the book when I did, because I've been doing this work a long time, is that I felt the world was finally ready to listen about listening. Whereas before it felt like a nice to have, it's moving more into the category of a need to have, because organizations are more dispersed because of the virtual environments and the needs have changed, and we had to be remote and adjust to very difficult things. And now we know that mental health and awareness is at a, you know, it has increased. So if you're not listening well, you're probably not surviving well as a company. So more and more business leaders, thankfully, are attuned to this. And it's our job to help them understand that there's great business benefit when they spend time and resource on this. And at a bigger level, and the leaders we work with get this, is that their people are more fulfilled because their lives are more fulfilled, and then they become better, you know, partners, parents, and then they become better employees and they're more engaged. So there's a lot of wins that way. But what we do is really we create a common language of listening in organizations, which is unheard of because, again, most are not thinking about that or haven't been taught to do that. And we were just at a company last week, and I happen to know they'd be very happy for me to share their name. That's Brewer Science in Missouri, and that's exactly what they're seeking to do, is to create a common language around listening so that they, you know, continue to be an employee-owned company that's resourceful and doing their best work together, because they're people first and customer first. And so they know when they invest in the people and that kind of a paying attention to those kind of skills, that it improves every aspect of their business.
I'm curious. I've been in the corporate world for a number of years, and there's kind of that program of the year to try to improve ourselves and our interactions with others. When it comes to listening, which is specifically what you're talking about, how do you coach people to be self-aware as to whether they're good listeners or not?
Well, yeah.
Problems.
So, according to one of the things we share is that, you know, I ask people, first of all, nobody's ever answered this question, anything other than a resounding yes. Is listening important? And 100% of the time, people say it is absolutely a critical skill. And then, you know, you dig deeper into what have you done to learn to have a listen or be a better listener. And that's when the answers start to fall off. But the other part is really how good of a listener do you think you are? And you know, there's a study by our Harvard Business Review that says, you know, no matter how well you rate yourself, you're not as good as you think you are. It's like driving. If I said, how good a driver are you, Jane, you probably, you know, most of us would be like, well, I'm pretty good. And your partner's sitting over there shaking their head.
Head shaking, no.
Yeah. So my criteria is like, ask somebody else how good a listener you are, not yourself. That's really, ask your spouse, ask your partner, ask your customers, ask your employees. See what answer you get. That's a better litmus test. So, and unfortunately, it's very easy to show people pretty quickly that even when they have good intentions to listen and really try, they miss the mark. And again, it's not their fault. It's because they've never been taught. And part of that teaching is understanding that this isn't just something that you do, like active listening, which is considered, you know, the known way of listening. Pay attention to somebody. Show them that you're looking at them. Show them that you're empathizing, that you're being curious. That's not really what this is about. That shows you a little bit of the what's, but the brain is such an enemy of listening that it's too hard to overcome. Our brains are on fire all the time telling us to do everything but listen. So the metaphor that I wrote about in the book and that we share with our clients is you wouldn't go hiking in the woods for 2 weeks without any supplies or in your backpack or tools. And yet we go into what I call the conversational woods every day without any tools or supplies. And it is windy and it is tricky and it's easy to get on side routes and get lost. And before you know it, somebody's getting hurt. So we have to back up and learn the tools to be in the conversational woods. And we have a very experiential way of teaching that to organizations that teach them one by one how to put the tools in their backpack so that as the listener, they're guiding the conversation to a discovery. To the discovery is an insight. It's the understanding. It's not just paying attention, but it's really uncovering and discovering something and the meaning of the conversation. And that's how we solve that epidemic drought. And when you do that, you have customers for life. You have employees that want to go to the wall for you and teams that really collaborate well. So we do this through game-based learning. So it's very applied and very practical and very tangible.
Just to get some examples in our head and then talking a little bit more about your methodology and approach, let's say you're a customer service rep in person and you're at the front desk representing a very large company, and you have very little control over how things are put together and the policies and whatever. And I come up to you and I start screaming at you because I have this product. It doesn't work. I've been calling. Nobody will help me. And then I start getting really worked up. After your training and your working, how should you be dealing with the likes of me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, I remember last year I was at the airport. It was like 4 a.m. And some of the people were yelling at the people at the airport because the service wasn't fast enough. And I'm thinking to myself, these are the people that showed up. Like, why are you yelling at the people that showed up?
Like, good point.
You know, you're gonna upset the people that show up that they don't want to show up. Like, that's crazy. And you know, the customer's always right. So a couple things, and that's a great example because customer service, it's such a hard job. But you said a couple things that matter, and that is we're so used to falling back on policies to help ease the pain for the customer, and when that's just more aggravating. It's mm-hmm. really more don't tell me that that feels like a very stock answer, and that you don't understand what I'm going through. And so the expectation too often with listening is that you have to show up and be empathetic. And in reality, I believe it happens the other way around. When you learn to listen with the tools and the right skills, the empathy follows. And when you empathize with someone, not agree, that's a big, big difference. You do not have to agree with the customer. That's why the customer is fundamentally not always right. You can totally disagree with the customer, but still listen in a way that conveys understanding. And when you convey understanding, that's what de-escalates. This is what the best hostage negotiators do. This is what the best conflict managers do, the mediators, is they find the areas of agreement. And the way to do that is through the understanding. What can I agree with versus what do I need to disagree with and push you down the road, which is how customer agents are taught. Tell them the policy, tell them what, you know, and then it just becomes, it's not a relationship anymore. You're talking to a recording.
When you talk about that, that empathy follows, but listening comes first,
yeah,
and understanding comes first. Wow, that's kind of hard. And you also, I think sometimes that empathy sounds very fake, like that's number five on the list, that when I'm interacting with people, say,
yeah,
I am sorry that that is frustrating to you. And
right.
So how do you make it real?
Well, one of the tools that we teach on the problem is the cost of not listening. The solution is what we call the listening path, which is the path to understanding. How do I walk a path with you in the forest and help you? How do we do that together to get to the understanding? And one of those tools, and I'm jumping ahead because they are sequential, like notes on a piano. You got to learn, you know, C, D, E, F, G before you can play a song. But one of the things we teach people is it's called the flashlight. And the flashlight is, how do you tell the story back to somebody that they just told you? So how do you shine a light on what they just said? What we're used to doing is teaching people to repeat things that they hear. And that's different than summarizing the story they told you. And so when you tell someone their own story, it's amazing what that does in terms of de-escalating rudeness, yelling, conflict, because now I know that you know where I am. And when you know that, I'm more inclined to settle down. I'm more inclined to listen. It earns the right for me to tell you things. It earns the right for me to sell you things. But what we do is we jump right to telling instead of telling you what you told me first.
That's interesting because, again, you differentiated between just speaking the words back to them and telling their story. What do you think is the critical difference between those two?
It's a love language that people they're yearning for. I mean, I've had to tell in the course of my career a lot of people things they don't want to hear. A lot, right? You know, as an executive coach, as an advisor to a business. And so people are like, I don't know why it doesn't bother me. And you tell me stuff I don't want to hear. And I've learned that, you know, I give people the keys to the kingdom. And I had this situation not that long ago where I was telling somebody pretty, you know, tough stuff. And he goes, I don't know why is it okay that you're telling this? And I said, well, not for nothing, but I spent 15 minutes deeply understanding you and not just saying I understand. That's the other thing that's a big bad habit in listening. I understand. Well, if you say that to me, there's nothing that makes me feel less understood than the words I understand. Because I don't know that you understand. When I know you understand is if you say, Well, what it sounds like is you're feeling frustrated. You're feeling angry. You've had this product for 6 months. You've tried seven people. Nobody's helped you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now I'm telling you the story you just told me. Now I know you understand. That's a big difference between saying you understand and knowing you understand. So when you tell people what you know that they said and you repeat it, it's very powerful. I mean, this happens to me at a restaurant. I want my dressing on the side. I want no onions. Please put this one and that on. I make my own salad. If the waiter or waitress walks away and doesn't tell me what they heard me say, I have very little confidence it's coming back right. Am I a problem as a customer? Absolutely. But if they tell me, well, you want it this way, this way, this way, and it still comes back wrong, then I just know it was a mistake versus you didn't really hear me.
That's an excellent example. That's really helpful. Now, in the description that I've seen of your book, What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? One of the bullet points, one of the many bullet points that intrigued me, is to replace interfering direct questions with just six questions. Can you explain that? That sounded kind of cool.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. So one of the things that happens in the conversational woods, and because our brains are the greatest enemy of listening, is that we end up shaping the story by the questions we ask. So this is one of the misnomers about listening. I'm supposed to be curious, Jane, so I'm going to ask you all these specific questions, and you're going to answer them, and I'm going to show you how curious I am about you. But in reality, that creates a bias, because if I want to sell you something, I'm going to ask you questions that are going to get me to the sale. If I want to give you a certain piece of advice, I'm going to ask you questions to that end. Or if I think I know what your story is, and the brain goes off wild and tells stories to ourselves all the time when we're listening, I'm again shaping it. So we all know we're supposed to ask open-ended questions, but there's really not a lot of training on how to do that effectively. And what happens is we get so contaminated with what we're going to ask that we lose our way. We're lost already. So fundamentally, if you use what we call the compass are these six most powerful questions, that will keep you on the main path to understanding. And those questions alone will get you further than any of your specific questions. And the reason I know this, as a former therapist and as someone who's watched a lot of people and I've been an interviewer, is that the most powerful questions that journalists and therapists and a good investigator use are these six questions. And they're, take me back to the beginning, then what happened, how does that make you feel, that's a almost imperceptible, nonverbal, sort of verbal, tell me more. That's the next one. Tell me more. How does that make you feel? And you fill in the blank. And it doesn't matter if you're correct about the feeling, but it matters that you have an idea. So rather than I know you're frustrated, it sounds like you're frustrated, or it sounds like you're livid, or it sounds like you're really upset because. And so you have two feeling questions and four situational questions. That's all you need.
And I like hearing the questions, and it certainly does make sense. And as a therapist, it really comes through very clearly that that's what therapists might use. However, if you're working for business, that sounds awfully touchy-feely. So how do you sell that to the CEOs and human resources people at the companies that with whom you work?
Yeah, well, so Jane, can you tell me more? Why touchy-feely?
Well, it just sounds like you really are aiming at your customers' feelings, and I could see some companies thinking, oh boy, that's going to open up a whole can of worms here. So That's why I'm thinking that perhaps you might get some, as a consultant, get some pushback on that. And how do you resolve that pushback?
Yeah, well, that, it's very astute of you, Parv, and I was genuinely curious as to understand. So one of the things that we know is that it's because we confine initially people to only those six questions, they have a hard time only wanting to ask those six questions. The reality is they catch on pretty quickly that those questions get you farther, and we show them how you'll get more from those six questions than if you ask your prescribed questions. And we make sure that people see that very early. We used to get a lot more pushback about how does that make you feel, and the feeling questions. I will say that has been less so in the last couple of years. And I think that's from the pandemic, because we all are more aware of feelings, and it's been a little bit more okay to ask. And, you know, if you're not asking about the feelings, you're missing the point. You really aren't getting your customer if you're not asking about the impact and how the feel and how the people feel. You're going to have a hard time selling. The best salespeople do that. So it's really how you ask it, not that you ask it. Like, I wouldn't lean in and be like, how does that make you feel? And I wouldn't say it like a therapist, but it's like, hey, you know, how are you feeling about that? How are you feeling? Yeah. That's important.
Okay, another perhaps a pushback that might come forward by an employee of a company you're working with. Might be, yeah, you're telling us how to act, but you should be coaching those customers who are screaming at us.
Yeah.
What do you want to tell them to do?
Well, wouldn't it be great if we could control that? You know, so solve the problem you can solve, first of all. And one of the things that is so important here is that when you listen to understand, you earn the right to say things people don't want to hear. So sometimes this earns you the right to be more directive. I mean, I was with a company a couple months ago, and one of the things, you know, I had to say in front of the room was, look, I'm going to tell, I hope I've earned the right. I spent a lot of time understanding them to tell you something that's going to make you feel very uncomfortable. Here I go. But I didn't do that when I walked in the room the first time. I had to first earn that relationship and that right. And that's, if we're looking at sales, for example, that's how you sell on value. You're supposed to be able to not just deliver what the customer asks for, but what they need. There's all kinds of, there's the challenger sale. There's all these ways we're supposed to be the advisor to our potential customers. But you go in and just start telling them how they should act or do for their business, you're probably just going to upset them. When you understand first and you get to the emotions behind it, that earns you the right. And in the customer service realm, you know, sometimes it's how you command respect is, I'm going to first understand you. So then I can tell you, now I'm going to ask you to understand me. And that's how the relationship is born. And that can, by the way, happen very, very quickly. When you learn how to de-escalate quickly, that shifts very quickly.
Let's go back to talking about some of the causes of what we have seen as an escalation in some of these negative practices, and probably heightening the need for your services and for people to read the book and to think more about how to deal with it from the company side or the opposite side. And it doesn't have to be a business relationship for sure.
Yeah.
Things that I hear people say, people are driving insanely as compared to 5-6 years ago. It's like they aren't following the rules at all. You mentioned bullying earlier. Certainly that's been intensified with the addition of social media. Bullying's been around for way too long anyway.
Yeah.
And then you have the social unrest that has been springing up, and that seems to be, you know, kind of rooted in communication as well. But some of these things have been going on for a really long time. Why all of a sudden have they kind of just out of control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the intensity of pace of things has changed a lot.
Are you talking about our expectations?
I am. Yeah, I am. And our time pressures and what we're holding up. I mean, I think so here's part of what I think about is when that person's in the car and they're raging, I think, what's going on in their life? Like, what's happening in their life, right? You know, if I knew that they just found out their parent had cancer, or their kid just, you know, they just found out something about their kid, or they're running from one meeting to the next, it changes my perspective on that behavior rather than they're just out of control. So what I know is that the pandemic created what I call a tsunami effect. So we had this experience and the wave went out and we're getting caught in the undercurrent still. There's a boomerang back effect where it's like now we're going to really feel the suffering because that isolation and that intensity took a toll on all of us. And part of why I know this, by the way, is because in my late 20s, when I was building my career and I was an athlete that was very, very competitive at the time, I was playing at a very high level and kind of had the world by the, you know, everything was in front of me. I was in an auto accident that I had 3 years of chronic pain where I still was functioning and doing my thing, but I was dealing with something and it went acute. So in a day, my world flipped upside down. And I had to really reinvent myself because I spent about 10 years fighting my way back from that injury to a different level of normalcy. So when the pandemic happened, I remember sitting on camera like we're, you know, sort of we are today and going, everybody's in the same boat. Last time this happened to me, I was by myself. And there wasn't Zoom and all that stuff. But I was like, wow, this is so universal and nobody has any idea what we're in for. Because I had a spinal injury and somebody said to me very early when it went acute, backs take a long time. And I was like, wow, was that ever true? Pandemics, things like this don't just get fixed like we hope they do in 2 weeks, right? It takes a long time. And so that... I know what that isolation and that out of not being able to live the life we want, what effect that has on the psychology of humans, because I experienced it and of course with my background in psychology. So I think that's part of the suffering here. And, you know, we got even more disconnected and we got more disconnected from ourselves because we lost a lot of control. And I think people are, you know, not in different ways are feeling the effects of that. And we have to try to figure out how to be, and, you know, there's political unrest and, like you said, all sorts of things. So, but really what's the thread is how do we relate to one another and how are we making sure that we are being understanding of one another? So I believe we need to put more resource on this. Because I think most people, not all, most people, whether we disagree or agree with them, politically or otherwise, want the same things. They want their kids to be happy. They want to be, you know, healthy. They want to have, you know, a good life. And we have more in common than we are different. But we have to start seeing each other again in a different way.
What you're saying makes so much sense because I think you're right. Everything is so black and white instead of looking for those ways that we can connect and we are the same. It's almost impossible for people to think of others as being the same as them. You're either in this camp or that camp politically. And that to me, I've never in my lifetime seen this much divisiveness. And frankly, if you think differently politically, it's breaking up families. But you said, how can you actively, without ticking off everybody, say, hey, let's get together. Are there ways of doing it where you might not be rejected as quickly?
Well, so I call it the gift of understanding. And that is really just to give that gift as often as possible without expecting anything back. We often want the other person to listen to us. That's the ask. Can you tell my kids that they need to listen to me? Can you get my husband? You know, I'm like, good, yeah, bring him to the water. Or you could just change a little bit of what you do and see what happens. And part of what we get from our clients is, sure, there's this big business impact, but there's also this amazing personal impact. One of the gentlemen that we work with at a company yesterday said, you know, I'm hearing and picking up on a lot more in conversations than I used to. It's, you know, I'm seeing parts that I never would have seen before. We've had parents go, I had a conversation with my 16-year-old after just one day in a workshop with us, and I got the first unsolicited hug that I had in 3 years from my dog. We had a woman who had her best friend, only in her upper 40s, got pancreatic cancer, and this woman was in the drug industry for cancer, by the way, and her friend called her in a crisis, and she went right over, and what she was trying to sort out, her friend who's got pancreatic cancer, is what she wants to do with the next 3 months, because the doctors are telling her to go to the hospital and do this and get this treatment and that treatment. And she said, normally I would have gone in and tried to solve that and tell her exactly what to do. And what I did was use what you taught us all day. This happened the same day. And she said, she came to the conclusion about what she wants the next 3 months of her life to look like on her own. And I just helped guide her there. And now she's going to go to Mexico with her family and live her life. Like, she came to a life-altering decision because instead of this woman going in and trying to fix it for her, she listened and let her fix it. And now she was in tears. Like, there was just a transformation in their relationship. It was such a beautiful gift she gave her in this very trying moment, in this awful time in her life. So when we do that gift, we get back. And when we get back, then we want to do it again. And when we do that again, then we get more and others get more. And that's how you start a movement. So that's why we do the work we do. We want to impact businesses. We want to make a difference. I love business. My father was a businessman. I want companies to be successful and places to work to be amazing. And I also want parents to know how to get their kids to talk about their day and for kids to understand that their parents' point of view, like, it all matters. We have to teach them how.
We've been talking with Christine Miles, who is an author and professional keynote speaker and consultant in expert listening and a new way of addressing listening, as we heard today. And she has degrees in psychology, including a bachelor's from Millersville University and a master's in psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks again for joining us today, Christine.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Well, this weekend, WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're featuring the six-piece jazz funk band from Kenosha, the Cal Bergendahl Project. At the end of every WGTD midday newscast, we feature a song by a local artist. So please join us for Noon Tunes Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music.